The Fan.
Twins Techie. Gleeman.
How have you been?
I mean, I'm here in the flesh.
Yeah. I haven't seen you in a month.
Yeah.
You got bit.
Yeah.
And in the getting bit portion of the equation,
yeah.
Wasn't there a vocal problem or some yeah. type of vocal strain my, or voice problem?
I lost my voice. I mean, it's still kind of a little bit not amazing. My throat is all torn up. But yeah, that was one of the symptoms was I had I coughed for about a week straight.
Yeah.
And my throat just got so torn up, I think, that I just lost my voice, which my girlfriend, I think, enjoyed just because I don't babble as much then when we watch TV or whatever. But yeah, I couldn't. We skipped a week and a half of the podcast, and I haven't been doing any radio stuff, obviously, with you for three, 4 weeks now. But yeah, it's at least somewhat back to normal now. But yeah, it was rough for about, I don't know, a week or so.
How did you learn you had it? Was it a brain scrape?
No. Well, I just started getting a sore throat, and my girlfriend got it also, and she got the cough first, but then she was fine. And then me, whether it was just random or because, I'm a heavier guy or something like that, there's a lot of breathing aspects that you can get with COVID. So I was laid up for a while, and then it just kept getting...
Was your breathing negative?
Oh, it was, I was having a hard time breathing.
Ugh. Were you wheezing?
Yes.
Oh.
All that. Throat was all closed up.
Oh, poor Techie.
Yeah, so it was bad. So, but, I got some steroids, Barry Bond style.
Mm-hmm. Head does look bigger.
Yes, that's right. And I got, a bunch of good drugs and all that stuff, so I got okay. But then it took me 16 days to test negative. And I couldn't go back to the ballpark, obviously, until I tested negative.
Good thing you weren't in China covering the Olympics.
I would have been stuck there for a long time. So, yeah, that was... So I ended up missing another whole series, basically, after I was mostly healthy. But that's, precautionary. So I get it. Because, Rocco Baldelli got it separate from me. I didn't give it to him, thankfully. They were on the road when they got it. And Luis Arise, Dylan Bundy, some behind-the-scenes folks with the Twins I know got it. And then a bunch of media people locally got it, too. So I don't know where we all... Hanging out at the Wolves playoff game, or I don't know where we were.
Might be the dumbest thing you hear all day, week, month, or year.
Okay, here we go.
But like, how bad were your symptoms? Okay, because I know COVID, getting bit. I know the whole situation is different, pretty much for everybody.
Yes, I mean, like I said, my girlfriend got it. We got it at the same time. I'm sure we got it in the same place, wherever we were, and she had like a mild cold for a day and a half.
See, and here's the question is, do you sense that we are approaching a time or a period where getting COVID is not treated like, okay, you're away for X amount of days until you test negative? I'm not. Maybe. I don't know enough about it to be like, and I'm not going to be flippant and be like, well, it's akin to getting the flu. Well, it's akin to having a bad cold.
Right.
Might have been for those 1 million people.
For some people, yeah.
The next million might have lingered for, and they may have lost taste and or smell for X amount of weeks, months, years, or whatever. But like, did you learn anything during this that COVID is closer to being treated as almost a common malady?
Well, I think if I just had a different job, I mean, my job, you have to test negative to go do the job because I'm not going to walk into the Twins clubhouse and give them all COVID.
Oh,
you know what I mean? But if I just had a job where I worked from home, let's say, which I did for many years, 20 years, you wouldn't have to be taking tests necessarily. You would just feel better at some point. But I can only speak to my experience, which was, I mean, it's the sickest I've ever been in 38 years or 39 years of my life.
Damn.
I've been lucky that I haven't had, some diseases and stuff where I've really had a horrible experience in the hospital. But
agreed.
Yeah, it was bad. Now, why it was bad, if I had some underlying, health issues, just being a heavy set guy or something like that, maybe there's some of that. But yeah, I would say for about 8 to 10 days, I was not in a position to do anything. And for about 4 or 5 days right in the middle of that, I was, you know, thinking about maybe going to the hospital if I hadn't been able to secure some meds and stuff. I did like a video hospital visit where they prescribed me some stuff. So it was, I don't know. It does, coming back and, you know, the weather being good, and I missed 3 weeks at Target Field basically, and being back here. And
they got good.
They got good. I'm happy they've now won a series against Cleveland, because I returned for the Houston series and they got swept.
Yeah.
And a couple of people were like, maybe you should have taken a couple more series off just to make sure you're healthy here.
Yeah, so how is Dustin Morris? Yes, I haven't talked to him in a while.
They're
Mike Herman doing well?
They're all doing well. They were all thrilled to see me, as usual, I'm sure. But yeah, it was, I don't know. It does make you appreciate being, this is going to sound very absurd, but for me, it made me appreciate being able to breathe without thinking about it, really, because it was rough for a while.
In the 48 hours I had it a year and change ago, the fatigue and not being able to move, do anything, read, pray, look at a computer, text, whatever.
Yeah.
It was 18 hours a day. And it's like 3-4 days after it, you know, when I'm like, hey, we're okay. Right. I looked back at it like, oh my God. I mean, that was straight devil, not being able to do anything.
Yeah, that was the weird part that I experienced, which is, like I said, I had 4 or 5 days where I was just having trouble breathing and I was just napping all the time and taking meds and stuff like that. But even then, once I felt 90% better, I was having what you described, which is just crazy fatigue.
Yeah.
Where you spend 20 minutes doing something and you're just like, well, I'm done for the day.
It's the heaviest feeling.
Yeah.
It's different than being tired.
Right. It's just, you're not even sleepy. You're just like, I can't do anything. And then the other thing you described is, so they were on the road when I finally tested negative. So I couldn't go back to the ballpark. They were off on the road, but I could write articles or so I thought. And I would, you know, punch up the old article and stare at the blank screen. And I've been doing this for 20 years. It's easy to write an article.
Yep.
And my brain was just like, I couldn't focus enough to start writing.
So did Dan Hayes, Russo, or Krasinski then call Craig Calcaterra?
Yeah, they were ready to bring in the reliever, basically.
Okay, well, I mean,
a Reef can do baseball analytics too, they told me. Water. So,
can you imagine? I mean, because baseball's the best with analytics, in my opinion.
Yeah, that would be.
I think it's the most pertinent with the way the game is played.
Yes.
Can you imagine an Arif Hassan baseball analytics story?
I'd never get, it'd be a Wally Pipp situation. He'd Lou Gehrig me, and I would never get the job back.
It'd be Tolstoy-esque. Well, it's great to see you again.
Yes, it's great to be alive and back with you.
Want to chat about Byron Buxton. Jahnair Cano, who now has 2 relief appearances. I didn't know he was on the team. I watched him last night, and it was Anthony Munoz reincarnate.
Wait a minute, how do you pronounce his name?
Jahnair.
Jahnair?
Jahnair.
Yeah. Jahnair,
The Y is a J.
Closer to a J than a Y is.
Yep. Havana's finest. He's awesome.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, he was awesome last night against the Astros. He got tagged. Plus, the NBA Final Four begins this evening. We got a lot on the docket. The triumphant return of Aaron Gleeman at Aaron Gleeman. We have the podcast, the podcast with John Bonus, and so much more. You can learn about everything he does via The Athletic or theathletic.com. Subscribe like yours truly, and we'll mix in some sports conversation with the techie around the corner. But first, the juice.
Hell yeah, the Fan and NMC Exteriors are trying to put a grand in your hand with the National Cash Contest. Text the keyword. Don't text the keyword. How about you go to KFAN.com and enter the keyword spring. The keyword is spring. You just go to KFAN.com, put the word spring in there, and you're all set to potentially put
on the Fan.
Dan Hayes covers the Minnesota Twins for The Athletic and theathletic.com. He's a cohort with our beloved techie, Aaron Gleeman. And via Dan Hayes' Twitter, from a story he wrote about Byron Buxton and load management. Carlos Correa, set to come back relatively soon for the Minnesota Twins, out after being hit by a pitch. Correa had this to say about those second-guessing or finding or contriving consternation with Buxton purposely skipping games for, quote, load management. Carlos, they probably don't know the game of baseball. If you've got bleep to talk, about our best player, probably one of the best players in the game, then you don't know what you're doing. He's a guy that wants to be out there every day. When he's on the field, he's been performing at the highest level. He has 11 homers already. He's one of the leaders of the league. When you look at Byron and his knees this early in the year, that's something you have to be careful with as a team. And you have to take the necessary precautions in order for him to stay on the field. I'd rather have him, Buxton, for 120 of a full season than have him for 50 because he's trying to do too much. End quote. That's Carlos Correa. I mean, they'd pay $3 million for 120 games right now, right? Just like with the baseball gods.
Oh, yeah.
Take this $3 million, give us 120, bet settled.
It was an interesting quote. It's funny that, like, the Twins are in first place, and as Correa mentioned there, Byron Buxton has 11 homers and has been one of the best players in all of baseball now. Mm-hmm. And yet, what's the biggest story of the week is, constantly injured player takes days off. Why is that? I'm honestly sort of...
Yeah.
Dumbfounded by the whole thing.
I didn't know it was a thing until yesterday.
Yeah, it's only a thing in certain corners of the universe, mm-hmm. Twitter a lot of the time. But it's very interesting to you know.
Something bugged Correa.
Well, right.
I mean, for him to say that.
He's taken on a leadership role of the team. He also has been full of praise for Buxton, rightfully, on and off the field. And, you know, that's the thing is, you know, everyone knows Buxton's been injured for his whole career. You know, he's played one healthy season out of six or seven.
Yeah.
It's loomed over everything he's done, no matter if he's playing at an MVP level or he's struggling or whatever. That's not really up for debate. The debate is, you know, he's got knee problems based on an injury from several weeks ago. He's got some hip soreness based on trying to compensate for that. Playing him every day is just not something that the Twins think is going to work. When his knee's swollen some days, he's going to sit out. They're going to plan, like you said, load management, where they tell him this upcoming series, there's three games. We're going to sit in the middle game, whatever they choose to do. And I you can debate whether that's the right course of action and whether there are better ways to do it. And I know people got very worked up from Saturday's game because he didn't pinch hit, which you can debate if that's smart. You know, a true 100% don't worry about it at all day off, mm-hmm. versus just being in the lineup and potentially being available to come in late in the game. Clearly, the Twins think there's extra value physically and mentally to knowing he's not going to appear in a game at all that day. You can debate that. But the whole idea of a guy who's constantly been injured for 6 or 7 years and who has a knee injury that's people saw happen, you know, a month ago, taking some days off in order to lessen the swelling or give him 48 hours instead of 24 hours to recover.
Yeah.
It just seems confusing to me that people are like throwing up their arms and are so upset about that. Like it seems relatively straightforward, at least from where I'm sitting.
Well, it's what irritates me, going back to kind of how we were framing up things at the end of the first hour with the Wild PA, kind of as Wild fans or as Minnesota sports fans, we really delve into the poor us negativity that exists. If he comes out and gets a serious injury, then the misanthropes, the
right.
constantly pants-pissing individuals who just want something to rip,
right.
They're going to say Baldelli saw the knee injury, knows about the hip soreness, puts him out there, and he gets hurt.
Of course.
And so they get to win the game or the argument, so to speak, no matter what happens, because it's all reaction, it's all fire starting, and then they can just move on. This is, in my opinion, the only way to handle Buxton moving forward. If they're, you know, thankfully neither of these situations were severe, but if he has to miss a game here and there, so that over the course of a full season, we get 120, 130 games out of him.
Mm.
Give it to me every single time.
Of course. I'll take 100 right now.
The one thing that Buxton has always shown, now as he has raised the bar of his play, is that he will come back after missing 10 games and kick ass.
Right.
He's not a guy that needs that massive rhythm or momentum ramp up to do what he does. And so if we're going to miss a game here and there, to preserve that so that if we are indeed fighting for a division title in late July, August, and September, but he's healthy because we didn't overuse him now and wear him down, I want that every single time. So the argument and the frustration of it, again, it's just people who want to win the argument on the negative side no matter what, and Baldelli can't do right by those people regardless. He did right by, I think, those that are reasonable.
Yes, and like you said, you know, he sits out Saturday's game, doesn't pinch hit. They lose that game. Everybody's all upset. He comes back Sunday, he hits a home run, they win the game. Like, okay, that's his performance has not suffered at any point the last three or four seasons. When he's on the field, he's played at an MVP level. I mean, what he's doing this year and going back to last year is like unheard of in recent Twins history. I mean, he's just so far above and beyond even like an all-star level at this point. And I do think, getting to what you said, Nordo, I agree with, which is he's injured a lot. There is no good solution to that. And so I think people want, it's not satisfying to never be able to just go, well, if they do this, he'll never be injured again. There isn't that door to open. Yep. You know, door number one, door number two, and door number three, they're all, you know, he's injured, he's on the injured list, he's going to take days off, maybe his door number two. Door number three is we'll just kind of let him play, and if he gets hurt, we'll address it then. None of those are satisfying, good, easy, simple solutions. But I think people are confusing the lack of a satisfying good solution with them trying to, you know, actually get through this. They're saying basically he has knee soreness, knee swelling. Everyone saw him slide into second base it was the opening week of the season, I guess, or the first road trip of the season. At the time, it looked like he tore his ACL or something. They're thankful that he didn't have a significant injury, but he does have some lingering effects, and he's not going to play 15 games in a row, or at least they don't think he can play 15 games in a row. Buxton is a guy who comes in every day and wants to be in the lineup. So they have decided, we got to take it upon ourselves. We're going to tell him, Saturday's game, you're not playing. You don't even have to put your cleat. You're not going to pinch hit. You don't have to warm up in the seventh inning and do some sprinting in the back yep. to get ready to pinch run or come in. They view it as a different thing. And I think there's all kinds of room for debates and arguments about, should he have pinch hit? Is that too much? All that stuff. But I don't think that's the crux of the criticism. The crux of the criticism seems to be, this guy's an amazing player, and people are upset, really, that they can't see him for 150 games a year. But that's, nobody has the ability to change that. Buxton mm-hmm. can't change that. Baldelli can't change that. The management. What they're trying to do is avoid an injured list stint by, if we give him a day off a week, instead of a 30-game stint on the injured list, that's obviously much better for the team. And again, I'll rephrase this and say it, but they were in last place last year.
Yeah.
It was a horrible season. We're now 35, 40 games into this season. They are in first place
yep.
by multiple games. They're 17-7 over the last month. Byron Buxton has the second most homers in baseball. Why are we upset? Like, why is everyone as a fan base or as a Twitter collective or even certain media members like, why are we upset? Other than what Nordo said, which is that it's just very easy to stir the pot and preach to a choir that is predisposed to being angry, and you can always get that.
Yeah,
it's confusing to me in this, given how the Twins are playing lately.
I understand, but you're a journalist guy. We're not. Okay, we're cheerleaders.
I'm just a writer. I'm not a journalist.
So those who are suffering from like PTSD, but the P is puck, or from an NBA, you know, they're so mentally beaten down by what happened with the Wild, what happened with D'Lo, and
yeah.
giving the Alabama receiver to Detroit and not getting a high third or early fourth. It's, you take your anguish and your angst and your anger out on those you love the most.
Right.
Because you know they'll come back the quickest.
Okay.
And that's what's happening here. It'll, like many things in this situation, it'll be gone quickly.
I do think that's a fair point, that you're right, that if the entire sort of Minnesota sports collective is down, which often is the case. But I also think what plays into this is Vikings have been over. It's, you know, kind of a dead spot post-draft of it. It's the true offseason for football right now.
It was a dead spot for the Vikings when the calendar turned to December.
Okay. Wild are done now. Wolves are done now.
Yeah.
Lynx are not playing well.
Yeah.
What's left to sort of turn focus yep. towards? It's the Twins, and they'll gladly take the attention and the focus. Yep. But I think what you're saying is when a sports collective is kind of upset and now there's only really one place to aim that at,
yep.
it becomes the Twins. And, you know, if you'd have told people coming into the season, we're going to be 40 games into this thing, Twins are going to be up front atop the division. Mm-hmm. Buxton's going to have the second most homers in baseball, mm-hmm. And people are just going to be, you know, furious about it.
Yeah.
I think people would find that
so,
odd.
So I'm watching last night, mm-hmm. and Archer, I didn't think Archer, it wasn't anything great.
Right.
But he wasn't terrible.
He was struggling with his command, I think.
Right, but he was getting out yes. of it. So 35-40 into it, whatever it is, four innings, 67 pitches.
Right.
Against, I mean, honestly, I don't know the season long stats outside of Andrews, and thank God he played with the Rangers. I mean, casuals like me recognize nobody.
Yes, it's a rebuilding team for sure.
It has to be the most punchless team in Major League Baseball.
Yes, it's definitely among them.
Well, yeah. Then how come Archer doesn't get one, like a chance to get the win?
They don't care about, nobody cares about that anymore.
Chris doesn't?
I mean, he might. I doubt he does because he's coming from an even more analytically organization in Tampa Bay. But
okay, so 67 pitches.
Nobody cares about one.
With the, okay, excuse me. How come he wasn't able
to
stretch it
and go five or six instead of four?
Thank you.
From a pitch count standpoint, he could have. But I think A, it was a tight game at that point.
Yeah.
B, he left after facing the bottom of the lineup for a second time. So to leave him in for the fifth inning, he would have faced the top of the lineup for a third time, which starting pitchers get worse each time they face a lineup. So the first time through, you're pretty good. Second time through, you're a little worse than that. Third time through, you're a little worse than that. And then, as we said, he was struggling, seemed a little bit mechanically throwing strikes, was kind of hopping on and off the mound. It seemed like he was just trying to really, you know, avoid damage, but he wasn't at his sharpest. And then, you know, they felt like they had a fresh bullpen. Bullpen came in and threw five scoreless innings. The bullpen's been great since Tyler Duffy blew that save in the first week of the season. The bullpen has been phenomenal in a lot of innings and a lot of different guys working a lot because the starters aren't going deep in games.
Durant's heat's unbelievable.
Yes.
I think it was you who had the tweet, the 103-1 or whatever, like fastest pitch thrown in the history.
And then he broke it four pitches later. He threw 103-3.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he has now, I think, he's only been on the team for a month.
Wow.
But he has, I think, the 10 fastest pitches in the history of the Minnesota Twins, which is admittedly not that high of a bar, but still.
Yeah. Now, Jahnair Cano.
Yes.
The Y's pronounced like a J. Jahnair Cano. When did we get him?
Okay.
Is he supposed to be really good?
Uh-huh.
I didn't see the disaster against the Astros.
Well, okay.
So if you're like me and you tuned in last night.
Yeah.
And is he related to Robbie?
Well, that's a good question.
Okay,
I'm going to say no.
Robbie Cano's distant cousin rolls in, and he's on our team. And then I watch him, and I get bit. And I'm like, are you kidding me with this guy? Yeah. What an unbelievable arm.
So, a couple things. They signed him out of Cuba for, I think, $750,000 3 or 4 years ago. He was great at AA last year, got to AAA, had some control issues, repeated AAA to begin this year, and was great. So they called him up a week ago, basically. The Houston game that you mentioned, which is when he made his debut, he pitched two scoreless innings and looked great.
Wow.
And then they brought him back for a third inning, and he got, like you said, knocked around a little
bit. Damn it, Rocco.
So if you pull him too early.
Yeah.
Pull him too late.
Yeah.
Goes back to the manager.
Archer, Buxton, Robbie's distant cousin.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead and think Rocco's job's easy.
But yes, from a stuff standpoint, you are not alone in watching this guy and saying, where's he been all our life?
It's Anthony Munoz. Or is it Andres?
Yeah, Andres.
No, Andres.
Or Anthony.
Yeah, Anthony was the left tackle.
He's a little bigger. Yeah. It's funny.
He had breathing problems during COVID, too.
I believe it. Yeah. I got the left tackle build without the left tackle skill set, basically. It's me. But yes, Cano is, well, not quite at the Duran heat.
The best.
But he's, mid to upper 90s with the sinker. Very, very good sharp slider, especially against right-handed pitchers or hitters. And a usable changeup to lefties. I think they're going to give him a chance. You know, they're cycling through a lot of pitchers at this point, so you never know who's going to get sent back down to AAA as they need fresh arms. But I do think, you know, he's 27. He has a good minor league track record. The stuff is there. I think he has a chance to be a setup type of guy. And if he sticks in that bullpen and then your guy Duran ends up working the eighth or the ninth, you have two power righty arms that the Twins really haven't had for a very, very long time.
Take that, Taylor Rogers. Oh, by the way, has Rogers blown a save yet?
I don't think so. He's been very good in San Diego.
Right. He was 11 for 11 at one point.
He's leading the league, I know, in saves.
Yeah, and when he walks into the game, I caught like a minute and a half of a Padres bit the other night, and here he comes. I mean, they're treating him like Mariano Rivera. Well, why wouldn't they? He never blows saves. And just like a roar and his walk-up song and everything. I mean, it was a party.
Yeah, I mean Taylor Rogers was probably underrated during the time he was with the Twins just because he wasn't a guy who racked up 40 saves because he was often used as a part-time closer. But he was a guy who they would use in the seventh, eighth inning, ninth inning of key spots to get out of jams. And he was, you know, phenomenal in that role. I think, you know, they didn't trade him because they thought he wasn't good. They traded him because he was going to be a free agent after the season, and they liked Chris Archer.
Yeah.
I mean, Chris Paddock, excuse me.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, now Chris Paddock looks like he might need elbow surgery.
So Paddock dead season?
Yes, probably. I mean, he pitched five times for him so
far. And I'm starting to like him, man.
I mean, he was looking good.
He was a little rocky early, maybe the league adjustment, whatever. Then he settled in, and granted, it was only five or six or whatever, five and change or six, but I was like, hell yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely see why the Twins target him. Now, obviously, the hope is he can avoid surgery. They haven't announced that officially, but I think that's where it's trending towards, or that's where it's more likely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have him for two more seasons after this one, so if he can, let's say, come back in the middle of next year, then they basically get a year and a half of him. But yeah, it does change the equation of the value of that trade. They got Pagan, too, in that trade, who's turned it around a little bit lately, but yeah, I mean, Taylor Rogers was a good player for the Twins. He's going to be a good player for the Padres.
So with Royce Lewis, I mean, when Correa comes back, it's just over, right? It's just over for now,
well, that's
right?
The question. When they called Lewis up to replace Correa.
Like you've said for years, man. I mean, I know he was ballyhooed and highly touted. Yeah. We had to wait forever. Feels like he's 30. But he is a badass. He's got some badass.
Guess how old he actually is.
25.
22.
Hey, what? Doesn't it feel like we've been waiting for Royce Lewis for 10 years?
I believe his 23rd birthday is like later this month,
basically.
But yeah, when they called him up to fill in for Correa, my assumption was he will be the shortstop until the day Correa comes back from the finger injury, at which point they'll send Lewis back to AAA and continue to work at shortstop. But he's played so well, and the Twins have had so many other injuries at other positions. You know, he hits a grand slam the other night at Target Field. Was a great moment for a guy who missed all of last season with a torn ACL.
Yeah.
I'm starting to wonder, we're going to find out probably in the next 72 hours what the plan is, because Correa is on the verge of coming back on this road trip. I'm starting to wonder if they're just going to look at Royce Lewis and say, you know, we're fighting for first place here. We want to be a playoff team. Is he one of our 13 best hitters? Obviously.
Yeah.
But the question is, do you want to put a guy who's coming back off a torn ACL and has played exclusively shortstop for the most part in his career, do you want to put him in left field, at third base, in center field? Do you want to make him a utility guy, or is there some risk to that? So I think we're going to see Royce Lewis playing alongside Carlos Correa at some point this season. He's, as long as he stays healthy, he's too good to keep in the minors for the entire season, which is an encouraging thing for Twins fans. It's just a question of, are they ready to start putting him in a utility role? Because if Correa leaves after this season, he has the ability to opt out, obviously.
Yeah, that's right.
Royce Lewis is still going to be their shortstop, they hope, for the next 10 years after this one.
Yeah.
So that they
they had it all figured out.
That's right. They may be hesitant to throw him out in left field or throw him at third base because they want him, especially coming off the injury, to get as many reps at shortstop as they can.
Who do you like more and why? Luca or Steph?
I still think the Warriors should be heavy favorites here.
No, I mean the players.
Oh, the players.
Luka.
I mean, they're both fun.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully you can get into League Freak this year if you're interested. I think we've had some defections, but we're all elite NBA minds.
Yes, of
course. So we've watched Luka every step of the way.
Yeah.
Everybody knows Steph, but now people are warming up to like Luka's size, his rebounding, his Euro step, he hits a step back three. Who hits a step back three by design and gets their feet behind the line every single time? So he's a magician. He's a modern day Magic Johnson for me with the way he plays. But, you know, so now a lot of people are starting to see him do his thing, specifically the way they just bounced that woebegone Suns team, man, losing by 30 at home in game 7. Are you kidding me? Then you got baby Steph, and Clay's hitting everything, and Draymond Green, we know what he does, and Wiggins is contributing, and Poole scores, and so on. Good series, but like as a player to watch, who do you love more and why? Luka or Steph Curry?
I mean, I think Steph is one of the most enjoyable to watch players in the history of the NBA.
Yeah, I agree.
But I will say this about Luka.
Because he's like a nice, kind, affable, loving superstar.
But also,
Luka's a freaking killer, man. He gets mad during games.
But that's fun, too. Like, he had that one where he crossed over whoever was guarding him, and then he hit like a 30-foot step back and then just sort of stared at him.
Yeah, I know.
He's a little closer to the Pat Bev spectrum than Steph Curry, obviously.
Yeah.
The thing you mentioned.
The Pat Bev spectrum.
You know, he's at the far
some
end.
Some clinician listening right now. I was going to take that and run with it.
I mean, did you guys talk about Pat Bev's appearance on ESPN? It's incredible.
Started the show. It was unbelievable.
Yes. But yeah, I mean, Luka's, like you mentioned, you know, from a talent standpoint, you look at the rest of that Dallas roster.
Yeah.
And they have no business being in the conference finals.
Correct.
Which and everything revolves around him. I mean, he's got the ball in his hands 90% of the possessions, basically. Mm-hmm. And it's funny how that used to be a criticism.
Yeah.
It used to be, well, he's just the whole offense, and he gets tired down the stretch, and he doesn't play defense.
Yep.
But all of a sudden, now that they're winning, then people go, oh, well, Luka's got this all-around game that's so good. I don't know that he's changed that much. I mean, he's been pretty incredible for a long time.
Never plays defense.
That's true.
Gets a million tees.
But it's here. I'm going to make a cross-sport comparison.
Sweet.
It's a little bit like Buxton taking days off. If Luka being a mediocre defender and taking plays off on defense allows him to do what he does on offense and allows them to make a playoff run like this by conserving his energy on one side of the ball, it's sort of like Buxton taking a random game off if it helps him stay healthy for the longer term.
Can you repeat the part of this stuff where you said all about the things?
Remember when Jimmy Butler played for us?
You were minus 3,500, by the way, to hit that drop.
Well,
as I was talking,
we might get to see the Bulldog in the finals again for a second time since he left us.
Yeah.
Boston and Miami. I mean, this tonight specifically, I believe this is an underwhelming type series. I think this is going to be old school throwback, especially
sure.
If Marcus Smart plays. The junkyard dogish guy for the Celtics. But I mean, I think this is going to be walk it up, try to set things up. It's the scores are going to be low. It's going to be a bloodbath. It's going to be a meat grinder, though.
I am super impressed by Boston because I did not expect this, especially when they had some injuries coming into the playoffs.
Same.
They weren't at 100%. And I just did not. Maybe I put too much weight on where they were midseason when they were struggling a little bit.
I can't figure them out.
But their defense is just crazy tenacious.
I know, but the Nets were terrible.
Yes.
They just lacked cohesion. They can't figure the bit out with Kyrie and KD. Their bench sucks. And then you get Embiid, you know, with half a face, and Maxey only scores at home. Harris does the same thing every single game. Yeah, but he's not, you know, he's not good enough to elevate you. And so I'm not sure what they've beaten, you know?
Yeah, and the Milwaukee thing, like, I think, obviously, if Middleton plays...
Probably beat Milwaukee, would have been. Right. Oh, yeah, then a fraud series without Chris.
Right, so it's the same thing. I think that would have been a much different series, obviously, because Milwaukee's problem at the end, that was part because great defense.
Boston beat Philly.
No. Boston beat Milwaukee.
Yeah, beat Milwaukee, thank
you. Yes, but Milwaukee's problem was they just couldn't initiate offense other
Miami
than
Miami beat Philly, I'm tripping.
But yeah, I know, who... I'm assuming Miami is a slight favorite in the series because they're number one seed, but I don't know.
I would imagine.
Slight favorites are minus two tonight.
Okay. That makes sense to me. I don't know. I agree with you that it's going to be some flagrant fouls, some scores in the 90s.
Yes.
A lot of free throws, which is going to be a lot different than the Western Conference series because I think you're going to just see some threes flying in the West. I think I would pick Warriors, Heat.
Yeah.
But... I've been underrating the Celtics for 3 months
phenomenal.
Now, basically. I agree.
It's terrific.
I love that there's so much turnover.
Agreed.
And that you're not getting fluky teams in. These are very good teams, but I love that it's not just the same teams over and over and over again.
Man, it's...
gives me hope for the Wolves.
Yeah, but it gives us all hope for humanity that you're back.
Yeah.
I mean, you got bit, overcame the wheezing, the lethargy, everything that went into getting bit, and now you are, I mean, you're like...
I'm wrong, by the way. Heat plus 150.
Really?
In the series right
in the
now.
Series?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. But then they have home court.
That's what I'm seeing from BetOnline. At least.
I might take that.
Yeah, I know. I might need. Oh, really?
We might have to go to Iowa right now.
Fill the tank.
Yeah.
But anyway, gentlemen, connoisseur of the most quality of Manischewitz, and for all of that, we love you. Welcome back.
I mean this. It was great to see you, PA.
Great to see you, buddy, and you're being happy and positive. That's awesome.
See y'all.
Aaron Gleiman, The Athletic, TheAthletic.com. Wrap on the show. What are we going to do here? You got Boston minus 170, Miami plus 150, Warriors minus 220, Dallas plus 180. The closer we get to sports betting being legalized in Minnesota, we will properly explain that via tutorial. But just quickly, if you think Boston's going to beat Miami and you want to win $10, you got to put up 17 of yours to win 10 from the house. If you think Miami's going to win, you put up your 10 and you collect $15. So the dogs, I mean, just in theory and premise like this, explaining it like this.
Yeah.
Let me get this straight. I get Jimmy the Bulldog, who's been to the finals, and Luka, who's unstoppable, at plus 150 and plus 180. Just hearing it like that makes me want to go dog. But then on the other side, I only got to put up 2-1 and I get Kurecek. And this MB3 with Tatum, Brown, and Smart, it's Luka unstoppable right now. And I only got to put up 17 to win 10. This is perplexing, the con.
It is. I think of the two series, I I've just been so hard on the whoever won Bucks Celtics is going to the finals.
Yeah.
I'm too far down that road. I would not bet the plus 150 for Miami.
No, I don't mind that take.
I do believe that of the dogs that the,
I got to take the Bulldog.
I'm down on Luka.
I like Hero off the bench.
Yes.
More than I like these C's off the bench, you know?
No, I do. What I've watched from the Celtics, their transformation final 3 weeks of the regular season and what they've done in the playoffs, the series without Middleton, how do you analyze that?
Yeah.
I've been so hot on the Celtics. I'm too emotionally in on just how I view that team to make a play. But if I'm separated from it, the plus 150, I mean, and you're getting four home games in that series too.
Right.
As the fact that they're the higher seed. So, take plus 150 if you're interested and good luck.
Good seeing you again.
Good to see you.
Eric Nordquist produces 9 to noon. I'm Paul Allen from the 651 Carpet Studio. Thank you very much for listening. Wrap shop.
And the wraps are brought to you by Metropolitan Ford, your truck superstore. Love you, Metro Ford. In the realm of Minnesota sports topics, it's easy to become morose or misanthropic. It's not hard to see the malaise. It's macroscopic. We get sucked into the void and now we're quite myopic. And blunt comments from GM Bill Guerin with those steely eyes rarely blinks while you staring. It's like you're busted in Vegas. Sad eyes at McCarron. Fiala was the Ferrari. He looked like a LeBaron. Now with Aaron, Gleeman makes a return from heavy breathing and a significant throat burn. Byron Buxton takes a day off and you're mad. But now if he sustains an injury, you're angry and you're sad. You can't win! Now look back to the point. Whether it's curse, karma, or luck, it's heavy in this joint. Every team gives us a reason to love them before we hate them. Tonight, put your money on Boston and Jason Tatum.
Well, you have a gambling problem.
Correct.
Podcast Today's Paul Allen Show. Or listen back to previous show and interviews by going to the iHeartRadio app or KM.